give me some of that good old love. Let me make you, you give me some of that good old love. Put your hands together and show me love. Let me make you, you.
Joined today by the one and only, the great legend, basketball hoops legend, and icon was just in the, I guess we can say, in the black community, the one and only Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf. How you doing today, sir?
I'm on the plane. How about yourself?
I'm doing very good, man. We're in LA today. Just finished the last game of the Big Three season. What's that like to be at this age? What, are we 50? You just turned 50.
I turned 50 in March.
Turned 50 in March. So you turned 50 this season, and you're out there competing against guys as young as 27, professional athletes as young as 27. And I don't want to say holding your own, you're doing more than holding your own. What is that like to be doing that at this age?
I'm trying to find one word, it's difficult. But, man, I'm still pinching myself. And I don't say that lightly. To be at this age, like you said before, and guys are 27 and above, professional, playing the game, and still being able to get to my spots and execute plays. I can't help but think sometimes, you know, I joke with him a lot, and I say this a lot. I said, man, y'all have a lot to lose. I said, because if I get the best of you, you look bad.
Mm-hmm.
If it's close, you look bad. If you happen to get the best of me one game, they're going to say, man, the man's 50 years old. But it's just a blessing that I've been able to, by the grace and mercy of God, keep my body at this level to be able to still compete. And I'm trying to do it for as long as I can, as long as I have a passion for it.
Did you ever see this happening, like playing this late in the life? Did you think, man, I'll be out this game by 35 or whatever the case may be?
You know, I never foresaw something like this, a big three, and after your career is over, you get into a league. I mean, actually, I was approached by another guy before, Chauncey Ashford, we call him CJ, comes on the road a lot, about this league. And at the time, timing is very important. And when I was approached by it at that time, I said, no, I'm not interested. Because you hear about so many leagues developing and then they fold.
Right.
And some time passed. CJ came to me and said, man, there's a league. I said, I already heard about it. He said, but they seem to be interested in you coming to try out. This is what's, I said, we'll find more information. And when he came back to me, it sounded at that time appealing. So I said, you know what? And I've been training, and I always try to stay in shape. Don't always play a lot of basketball. I do a lot in the gym, strength and conditioning work. And, you know, you start thinking, I still have something left. Younger guys. I'm hyper competitive. Let's do it. And I'm happy that I took the chance. And I just squeezed through. Getting picked, and then things just ended up that first year and second year just working out wonderful. So now I'm trying to do this thing for as long as I have a passion and the ability to do it.
Okay, so I've been a part of this journey with you for the last 3 years. Mm-hmm. And we watched you, and I've seen you train. I see that you're first one in the gym. I've seen the way you take care of your body. Mm-hmm. I've seen in the hotel gym, you're at the court, you're doing everything you possibly can. Mm-hmm. So that's what I see with my own two eyes, and I know. So now when I go back and I read and I hear words about your career fizzling out the end, words like lack of passion, lack of desire to want to play the game, mm-hmm. I don't understand that.
Right. We there's so many different dimensions to relationships. And sometimes it's true. Organizations, chemistry is very important. And there was a period when I was frustrated, I was angry, didn't feel that I was getting a fair shake. But sometimes when you go through that little period, it tends to follow you, and they put that label on your whole career, almost. And as athletes, we get frustrated when things aren't going our way, as humans.
Right.
And there was a period like, man, why am I doing all this training and working, man? You ain't giving me no time. So there was a period that happened. But then that competitiveness kicks in, and you're like, hold on, man, I'm not going to let you dictate what I do. and then you get pissed off.
Right.
It's like, I'm not gonna let you control this narrative or, and so we said, now this gotta be for me. And so that's when I started picking it back up and doing me. But no, man, you can't get to this level by and large without having some form of passion and desire to get better. That's pretty much been my story all my life, and I don't ever plan on letting up on that.
I do, so I have a lot of guests, and I talk to a lot of people, whether it be a Kenyon Martin, a DeMar Johnson. A lot of these guys have one thing in common. They're very big and athletic and tall. So they were blue chip guys. They knew in ninth grade that they would do something special, and they knew they were always bigger, taller, and stronger than everybody else. So it's like, oh, I knew I was going to the league in 10th grade. You know, I dunked for the first time in 7th grade. Now I have these crazy stories, whatever case may be. For you, obviously, as a normal-sized human being, that's not the case. You weren't bigger and stronger than everybody else, so it wasn't as clear-cut. At what age did you realize, like, there's something here? Like, I got a chance.
When I was in the 4th grade.
Okay.
But I never took the approach, though, that I know I'm going to the league. Because I know anything can happen in life. Hoped and dreamed and prayed for it and worked toward it. But when I was in the 4th grade, man,
when I was in the 4th grade, I knew I was going to the league. I think a lot of 4th graders think that they're going to the league. Well, because I, too, in 4th grade, knew that I was going to the league.
But I didn't think.
Just didn't happen.
But I was definitely, that's when my mind was made up that, look, man, this is what I want to do with myself. And I was blessed at that age in my life to know that this is what I wanted. But I used to always, at that age, I started playing against older guys, high school guys, on the playground. They were picking me up. Like first round.
Yeah, right.
You shoot for the ball. And I remember playing a couple of games for the school, and there was a game where the score was 43-46. We lost, but I had 42 of our 43 points. There was a game, it was 36-42. We lost, I had all 36.
So how old was this?
I was in fourth grade.
Fourth grade, Jesus.
So word starts getting out. And then you see what you're doing at that age against some high schoolers and junior high, and the game is getting to be a little easy, but the work you're putting in is a lot of work. But you see the gains that are coming from it. And so I knew at that age, not only that that's something that I wanted, but man, I'm on to something.
Right.
Right? People are picking me up. People, you know, walking the streets, they're talking about you. And so that's a motivator. It influences you to continue to go. And so around that age, I knew that I had something special, and I just had to keep working on it day in and day out.
So you go through high school, and you're a high school phenom, two state champions, so
yes.
Player of the state, junior, senior, all of that. Then, so obviously what they tell everybody in high school is when you get to college, it's going to be harder. You're not going to do this. That's what they say, right? And then you go in there and you pick up right where you left off. And I mean, was your third game in, had like 50, your second game in, whatever the case may be, it was 48 and then 50. Like I think the third game in college, you had 50 or something like that. Set all kinds of freshman records, whatever the case may be. Were you surprised that it was, I don't want to call it easy because that would be an insult to the other players, but were you surprised that you were that successful that fast?
But it is what it is, though. Answer to both of those questions, yes, I was surprised. And I was surprised that it was easy.
Okay.
But it was easy, I think, of course, by the grace and mercy of God, the work I put in, you know, the way you train, it starts to make sense. You know, the people that you're playing against, how you're being challenged every day, the mindset that you have, I mean, there's a process. And everything I did, even from elementary on up to that point, I'm constantly thinking about doing it faster, more explosive, quicker, more precise. You know what I mean? More consistent. And imagining 2-3 different individual people I'm playing against, and they're always this close to the basketball, playing by myself, and imagine I'm getting hit. And the more you do that, it becomes like second nature when you're out there with somebody playing. And a human being can't stay with you like your imagination can, always on it like that. And just constantly challenging yourself, man. So I was surprised. But when you start analyzing it that way, it's like, wow, in a sense, not to be arrogant.
I prepared for this.
This is kind of like what's supposed to happen.
Got you.
you know, of course I wasn't talking that way then, right. But, cause I remember a journalist came and asked me, he said, what do you want your career to say for itself? And I said, you know, I was trying to keep the middle course, but my vision was much bigger. You want to dominate. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, man, if I can average 12, 13.7 assists for my career at LSU, it'd be a decent career. I thought, because I'm thinking, okay, I'm regular size, I'm going to be playing against guys 6'5", 6'7", 6', whatever, just as quick, just as strong. And it blew my mind. You know, I came out, my first game was about 12, 13.7 assists. So, okay, my second game, I had like 21. That's when Dale stopped me at the door. He said, we need you to score more. I said, coach, I'll try. Third game was 48. Fourth game, I think 36, fifth game, national televised, the one you're referring to, in Florida was 53.
53, right.
And then it just, and I'm sitting here, I'm like, man, I'm still doing the same moves I've been doing since elementary and junior high. And that's why I constantly talk to people about the importance of consistency, man, doing that thing over and over until you, and you're getting faster and like I said, more precise, and don't ever stop, because it becomes easy after a while.
In your sophomore year, that's when a fellow by the name of Shaquille O'Neal joins the team.
That's right.
So when Shaq comes in, do they kind of tell you, like, you've been doing this thing with 30 points a game, that's great, we need you to take a back seat, or they told you, keep your foot on the pedal, it's still your team?
They didn't tell me that, but...
I know you've been hearing about Shaq, Shaquille O'Neal.
Right. Yeah, they didn't tell me that, but there were people saying that now that you have Shaq, and Stanley was a redshirt,
right.
So he was playing that year. So you have two seven mm-hmm. footers over 7 feet. And I said, well, you're not going to get as many shots. That ain't even on my mind. My mind is just, look, man, every time I step on this floor, I'm looking to play. And I was never that person that I'm looking to see, well, I'm going to try to get 40 or 50 or 60. Even my career, all the times I hit 40-something, 50-something, needed them. It wasn't like I'm just going for it. So I just played the game. And it just so happened that year, I ended up, and some people say, well, it's more impressive because you have 2 7-footers and you end up averaging over 28,
mm-hmm.
right? But it was tough managing because, you know, a lot of people want that ball.
Yeah.
But it...
How did Shaq feel about watching the Chris Jackson show?
Well, you have to ask him, but we did have an altercation once. Because I've never been that type of player that would deliberately, you know, not give you the ball if you're open, unless I'm trying to prove a point,
uh-huh.
you know, which happened in Denver. But that was a situation I missed him, and he said something about pass the ball or something. And I don't respond well when people come at me, you know, with arrogance or trying to intimidate me. And I said something to him. Then after that, the next day, Dale calls us in the office, and he says, what's going on? And I said, listen, coach. I said, I missed him on a play. He responded to me in a way I didn't appreciate. I said, that's the way you respond to me. I'm receptive. I respond well when people come to me in the right way,
mm-hmm.
right? And Dale basically looked at Shaq. He said, Shaquille, if you want to get it off the glass, is because at that time Shaq wasn't, he's a strong guy, athletic, runs the floor,
right?
But he wasn't a offensive dominant force, right? And he said, you want to get it off the glass, but I think that kind of, people don't say anything, but I think that kind of messed him up a little bit, especially when you're coming out, you're McDonald's All-American.
Yeah.
But he was definitely a force even in college, but he just didn't, during that particular year, didn't score a lot. But
he was
he listened to Dale because he respected Dale.
Right.
And again, he's a freshman, I'm a sophomore. but he kept, the thing about Shaquille, he kept coming to practice, man, and he busted his behind, put the work in. Even back then, he had said in the dorm one day, he said, man, I'm going to be the first player to make 80-something million. I didn't even foresee that there even being that much money. I don't know how he was able to come up with that number, but he made well over 80-something million.
Way past that.
Right, but he was relentless at LSU, man, and he took it well. He took it well. Then after that year, of course, I left.
So you have, so let's go from pick up right from there. So you have all the success immediately at LSU, record after record, player of the conference, player of the year for the conference, all that good stuff. Then you go to the NBA, third pick in the draft. And then now for the first time, it isn't just the walk on, you know, it's not just the easiest thing in the world. Now, was that a surprise to you that this wasn't, that you weren't able to just score 30 every night like that?
Yes and no, same. Because that summer, you're hearing all this, my first year at LSU, I was actually overweight. I was 185. I started taking this medicine called Haldol for Tourette syndrome. It caused me to blow up in high school from 155. At the end of the year, I was 172. So I'm still taking it. That summer, I ended up blowing before getting to LSU 185.
Okay.
So still, I'm pinching myself that, darn, I was 30.2 overweight.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And I'm trying to think, amnesia, trying to think of a question.
Were you surprised that you weren't able to just drop 30 and when you got to the NBA?
Yeah, so when I go to the NBA, that second year at LSU, I dropped back down. So prior to going into the NBA, I'm told, well, you got to be bulky. You got to be. And I wasn't using my reasoning then, but a lot of the players you're playing against in the NBA coming from college, you know.
Right.
And I ended up going about it the wrong way. I'm eating. I never had a personal trainer, right? And I'm getting comfortable, so I come back in that first year, man, I'm overweight. I'm like 19% body fat.
Mm-hmm.
And then Doug Moe, who drafted me, wanting to give me time like crazy, was fired. They brought in Paul Westhead, who's doing this up and down. I mean, wanting to be the first coach that scores 200 in a game.
Yeah, I would have thought that's what you wanted.
If I'm in shape.
Right, okay, got you.
I'm 19% body fat.
Right, okay, got you. Makes sense.
So I'm not yet. And then I'm in a place where I've never been in the snow.
Mm.
And when it snows, it's gloomy.
Mm.
You know, so I'm away from home. There's another coach that don't seem to really want me there. I'm out of shape. So I'm going through some things now. And then went through a period of depression. I don't mention things, but you know you're depressed.
Mm-hmm.
And that year was literally a bust. Even though I averaged 14, but it was 14 in a running system.
Right.
It wasn't really impressive. You know, and the next year I'm still overweight. But I ended up becoming Muslim. Ramadan came around. I started losing. And then I saw this article, and that's what did it to me. And I'm in the store, and I pick up this article, and it said, he's a bust. You know, certain things, man, when you hear it.
Yeah.
Even on the street, you say something about somebody's mama.
Right.
It triggers something.
Right.
When you say something about a bust. And, man, I remember looking at the guy that was with me. I said, man, it's over. I'm done, man. I ain't going out like that. I mean, I was pissed. I said, no, I ain't going out like that. So I started getting into the gym. I'm on the staff master for an hour. I mean, I'm busting my behind. I was at that point, it's like, no, I can't go out like this. I got something to prove to myself. And it ended up turning around for me. Ended up getting the most improved the third year after they, and then that's when they fired Paul Westhead. But I was out of shape.
Okay.
And you, just like when you train and you put the work in, you expect to see the results. Reasonably, if you coming out of shape, no, it shouldn't be a surprise.
Right.
That you stinking it up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then after that, once you change, let me ask you this: what's the biggest difference between Chris Jackson and Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf? Nobody ever asked you that before.
In a different way.
Okay.
There's still some similarities. There's some things in my life that hasn't changed. I'm competitive. I don't like losing. I'm always looking to want to improve, even though sometimes that improvement seems to come slower than I would want it to come. But Mahmoud, I think, is more seasoned. I think, you know, I put things in perspective more. I think I'm more balanced. Just overall, whether it's spirituality, whether it's morality, whether it's my work ethic, whether it's my eating, my rest, you know, just how I go about things. But there's still some similarities, but definitely, I think the biggest difference is just perspective. When your perspective changes, everything else changes.
It was like, to me, as a basketball fan, as a kid, Chris Jackson, when you talk about Chris Jackson, you talk about basketball.
Mm-hmm.
That's all anybody talks about is Chris Jackson. You talk about LSU, you talk about basketball, you talk about scoring, you talk about shooting, da-da-da. As soon as you say Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, you're not talking about basketball
anymore.
No. All of a sudden, we're talking about flag, we're talking about national anthem, we're talking about black ball. The words are different.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Right. I say Chris Jackson, say basketball.
Mm-hmm.
I say Mahmoud, black ball,
that. When I became Mahmoud, that's when my perspectives changed. And so, even then, you know, you don't realize it then that it's always bigger than what you do. But sometimes when you're caught up in it, most of your time is just dedicated to that.
Did it start to feel like this isn't about basketball anymore?
Oh, definitely.
Like that, you know, when you're doing interviews, they're not about basketball. When people are mentioning your name, it's not about basketball.
You get
when
tired.
They're talking about you, it's not basketball.
There are moments you get tired because your mind is expanding now. You're meeting people, you're having different conversations. And I knew something. I said, something's wrong. Not necessarily wrong. I said, man, I gotta dig deeper. I gotta find ways to piss myself off, literally, to come and play. And we always have these things that we pull from on certain days to motivate us a little bit more than others. And I remember being in Denver one year, and it was training camp time, and we would go to Colorado Springs. And I'm at the breakfast table. I remember like it was yesterday. It's like, man, gotta report to training camp in a couple of days. And man, I mean, my eyes start watering up, man. I'm like, I don't like going. But it wasn't necessarily because I don't like to compete. It was more so because my interest had begun to shift. I'm thinking more globally. I'm thinking about the world. I'm thinking about other things I want to do outside of basketball. You know, and I'm enjoying the growth.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And then sometimes this environment, being in with these teams every day, the conversations, the lifestyles, they weren't and never truly have been, because I've never been a guy that went out and did a lot of things that a lot of people do, not the stereotype,
right,
and athletes.
Gotcha.
But for me, to those environments became harder to tolerate and to cope with because of the conversations and the lifestyles. Like, man, my life is bigger than basketball. You know, and that's why I would bring books on the road. And I would begin to try to entertain, like, Dikembe Mutombo. I would throw Dale Ellis a book. We would sit on the side just to engage, to start up different conversations other than,
right,
a lot of times the typical stuff that,
right,
people,
right,
talk about.
Gotcha.
To get through it. But it became harder. I was anxious in a way, and guilty. Sometimes, like, I can't wait to the season, so I can just unwind and get around environments that really make sense to me, even more so, that attract me more. So it was tough,
So then now, when basketball, you find yourself 2 years later, I think out of the league at like 29, are you like, you know, whatever, that part of my life is done, or are you like, how the hell am I out the NBA?
Oh yeah, I went through that. I went through being bitter and angry. Because I'm still in my prime. I still have something to give. And you spend most of your life honing your skills to make it to this point. And you telling me just because I speak my conscience, not something that's wrong,
mm-hmm,
that's not factual.
Right.
But I just speak my conscience, things that we're taught to do,
mm-hmm,
as human beings and in this nation. And you're gonna penalize me for that. You know what I mean? So you know, even though people say, well, you came back and played, yeah, I was on the contract. You know? But it doesn't mean that when you look at how minutes dropped, people are crafty.
Mm-hmm.
They just not going to come out and say, we're getting rid of you because there are lawsuits against that.
Right.
They find subtle ways to get you out. And then you get tired of it, man, trick it, then I'll go overseas. You ain't on the show in town.
Right.
But you go through a period of being bitter, especially when you see cats. And it's not, okay, we got to make a living, but especially when you hear about these contracts.
Mm.
And then you look at some of the guys that you just gave a contract to,
right,
and you say, no offense, man, go get that money. Go get it while you can. I'm happy for you, but God dang it.
It's, right.
And you're feeling a sense of, this is the thing that got me too, you're feeling a sense of helplessness. And I hate to be in that position, like, I got to go, because we don't own our own NBA. We don't. I gotta go and depend on you to give me a job doing something I love. And you're not gonna do that because of And man, that's hard sometimes, to swallow.
Right.
You know, it's hard. But you know, when you get over it, you got to make adjustments in life. And I was just fortunate to be able to do that. And then the big three comes.
Gotcha. Now, let's talk a little basketball shooting. Now, let's just say hypothetically here now, because you are just one of the greatest shooters of all time. Who would be in your ultimate three-point shooting contest? You just put together a five-man NBA three-point shooting contest.
Well, I'm definitely putting Curry.
Curry, right.
I'm going to put...
Just running mate Clay?
I'm putting Clay in there.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And I got to go with the record holder.
Ray?
No.
Reggie?
No. Who's won two or three three-point contests?
Oh, Craig Hodges?
Yeah, I'm just... I can't leave him out. But in terms of flat-out game...
Mm-hmm.
You say top what?
Let's say five. If you want to say
six. Curry.
Clay.
Clay. Bird.
Bird.
Bird can shoot that thing.
It's there was such a different era. Do you think into that he can shoot with these guys?
No, you talking about 3-point contest.
Yeah, about, no, absolutely.
You just grab the ball and shoot.
Right, uh-huh.
That's different.
Right, got you.
Bird can shoot that thing.
Okay.
And if he gets into the rhythm, I mean, he can shoot it.
Okay.
I'm trying to think of names right now.
I'm thinking Ray Allen, Reggie Miller. Okay, I can't put them in there for you. Dirk, Nash.
I wouldn't go with Nash. I wouldn't necessarily.
I'm really shocked by the Ray and Reggie not being in there.
No, I played the game,
mm-hmm.
but I don't know. Reggie, was he ever in a 3-point contest?
He was in a lot of them.
How did he do?
I don't know if he won any of them.
So my point is, sometimes it's different.
Mm-hmm. Mark Price?
Yeah, Mark can shoot. Dale Ellis. But what I'm saying is different sometimes in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Like I tell people, man, if when guys are guarding you and you take a shot, some people, it's mental. A lot of it's mental. When a guy's on you and you shoot it, it seems like you concentrate better because there's this, and you're more comfortable because there's this notion, if I miss it, the man was on me.
Right.
Some of the toughest shots to make is when you're by yourself,
right.
Because you put so much pressure on yourself. And could people expect me to make it? I got to make this shot. You don't take the same shot.
Steve Kerr, Tim Legler.
Right. So taking the ball, and I know rhythm is everything too. Taking the ball and nobody's on you, that's a different shot. And even though Reggie busts a lot of them in your face during the game, he may not be as prolific with just, you know. That's it, man. For sure, Curry, Clay. I have to think about that one, man.
Okay, so let me ask you this.
Because you're dealing with a whole...
On all your teams that you've been on, and or even in your era in the NBA, did you ever think somebody was a better shooter than you?
No.
Never?
No.
Okay.
I couldn't afford myself that luxury.
So you never thought, you've never been around a guy and like, damn, that guy shoots the ball.
Oh, no. Well, no, but I've been, no. No. But I've been around guys like, man, that's, you got to come with it if you're in a shooting contest. You can't. And a lot of them, really, if you're just in a shooting contest in the league, you got like a 2-shot at the most, depending on how many shots you take.
Right.
If you go on to 10, you might have a 1-2-shot window. You better not miss.
Right, absolutely.
If you go on to 15-20, you may have a 3-shot because guys can shoot.
That much, especially when you're in a rhythm.
Because that's what you do, right? But a lot of them don't have that freedom in the game to do that. But if you just shoot in practice, and these guys can shoot.
Now, when you watch Steph Curry today, what do you think?
He can flat out play. I mean, mid-range, long ball. He's got it off the bounce. He can come off the screen, spot up and shoot. He can finish. I love what I see. Quick release, you know, because you got to go for it, which opens up the drive, you know, and then he can drive, which opens up the shot. I like it. He's very skillful. I love to see guys who are skillful.
What do you think when you watch Russell Westbrook play?
Relentless, aggressive. He's not as consistent. with his shooting. Sometimes he changes his shot. He'll shoot, and sometimes he'll, and sometimes he starts to go away from, especially if he's making some, then he'll start flicking, and very aggressive. Defensive, rebounds, just has an attitude when he plays. I mean, I love to watch that. But in terms of shooting, not the most consistent.
And the evolution of the point guard, when you were playing, the dream point guard would be like a John Stockton, then maybe even a Jason Kidd, and you know, you guys run the offense. Nowadays, if you look at the top 10 scorers in the NBA, six of them are going to be point guards.
Right. I say, man, a lot of point guards, especially Golden State, they don't have a green light, they have a fluorescent light. Mm-hmm. And when you're playing in a system like that, the goal looks like this. It doesn't look like this anymore. Especially when you don't have to worry about coming out the game. You know, you could miss some shots. It's a whole nother rhythm involved. I love it. And then when we were playing, even if the big man wasn't real dominant, you got to throw it to the big man, work off the big man. Now, there's no real traditional big man like back in the day.
But okay, so that's right. Before, it used to be, no matter who you center was, you got to throw it into
throw them. It in, work off of
so,
them.
Which I could imagine being annoying. How about today when your center's standing at the three-point line next to you? Would you think that'd be annoying too? Now that the center's out there standing next to you?
Provided.
Trying to shoot up just as many three-pointers as you are?
Well, provided. If he can shoot it. I've always been, this has been my thing. Even when I was younger, it didn't make sense to me. But, you know, that was the system. People did it. I'm like, look, man, if we're basketball players, why are you limiting this guy to being in the post? Why don't he learn how to dribble too in the pass and shoot threes and shoot jump shots? What if he's playing against a Shaq that's heavier than him and you want to pound him? Bring Shaq out. Make him work.
Right.
And you have somebody, you know. And so the more versatile you are, the more valuable you are. The harder it is to guard you. And it just never made sense to me. Like, even with guards. And that's the thing that overseas, when I went, I'm like, man, dude, I've been thinking all these years. Whatever guard drill is in, big dudes are in. Big dude drills, guards are in. Because, you know, it's all relative. I mean, they do it more from a power perspective. We do some of the same stuff. We may spin off of you, up and under, but we do more from finesse and speed. A lot of that stuff is the same stuff, just different angles, different positions. But so no, if you can play, if you can shoot, make it work. But there are times you need them to go down there. If you just shoot it,
right.
Yeah, it could be annoying.
Right. Well, our time is out. It was a pleasure. Thank you very much for stopping by, joining, talking about our journey. There's a lot more that I would want to talk to.
Likewise.
Limited, so maybe another time that we'll be able to catch up and finish our conversation, or, you know, go deeper into it, because I felt like we were going someplace with some things there. But, you know, time limited sometimes. But I appreciate your time, and it's been a pleasure knowing you, and a big fan of yours as a kid, and now to actually see you week in, week out, and what you're doing in the Big Three. Amazing. And hardest working man in the Big Three, as far as I'm concerned. So, congratulations, and I appreciate you.
Thank you.